out here.
Captain!
Yes.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, we have a lovely and talented guest here with us today. It's Danielle Radford from the Tights and Fights podcast.
Oh, hello. What is this, a crossover?
Yeah. Marvel Infinity War is the biggest crossover event in history. Me. This.
See, look, this is what happens when it's Max Fun Drive week.
Yeah, it sure is. Speaking of Max Fun Drive week, this is the Max Fun Drive. We're putting out a second Greatest Discovery episode in the midst of the Max Fun Drive because we just cannot let it rest. Danielle, you host a show on Maximum Fun.
I do. I talk about Westland.
what does the Max Fun Drive mean to you?
You know, it's Max Fun has given us.
I didn't mean
really,
to bring you over to pledge break, but
no, this makes me super happy because there, just like with any fandom, and y'all know, there can be very toxic elements to the wrestling fandom. And because of Max Fun for Tights and Fights, we have been able to foster a community that is incredibly inclusive, and it's the place for people who, you know, when something terrible happens with wrestling or when fans are super toxic, they can go, hey, that's not all of us. I have this own little special pocket.
We have a carve out. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a place for us where we can go. And yeah, we might talk about who we ship and our thirst traps, but like respectfully.
Yeah.
And it's a place where you're going to go where just like everyone else who listens to Max Fun and supports Max Fun, it's just going to be like a bunch of very sweet people. You're not going to get any of that like weird toxic masculinity. You're not going to get any kind of weird body shaming. You're not going to get any kind of weird thoughts about like the LGBT community or anything like that. Like, it's just a really supportive place for people who love a really problematic sport.
I think Star Trek maybe suffers from a little bit less of the toxic fandom thing, but it's not totally without that. And one thing
check your Twitter mentions.
But one thing we do hear from like the people in the Greatest Gen and Greatest Discovery Facebook groups and the subreddit and stuff is like, God, like the internet is so devastating to be on so much of the time, and this is just a positive place.
Isn't it nice? Max Fun related internet things just feel like a brain internet vacation.
Yeah,
it's really like that's where you know every day, all day long, you're in the regular old workaday internet, and then you get to go on vacation and hang out in the sun where it's cool and people aren't dicks.
Yeah, it's amazing. We'll be doing a pledge break in a bit to tell you about gifts you can get in the Max Fun Drive. But if you feel like the show has had a positive effect in your life, if it's something you look forward to and you can spare, you know, like the Jordan Morris on Jordan Jesse Go was saying, you tip your bartender a buck or two every time you order a drink. If you feel like this is one beer worth of fun every week when you hear an episode, consider going to MaximumFun.org/donate and contributing. And make sure you check off Tights and Fights as you select your shows, because Tights and Fights is great.
Boy, oh boy, Ben. Lately, our show has felt like six beers of fun.
That's because you drink six beers per episode.
That was really the joke behind the joke there.
You're
the Bella Caroli of my joke gymnastics. Thanks for the spot.
Hey, don't worry about it, Adam. I like to name the game, as they say in improv.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Don't say Klingons?
What the hell is going on this ship?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Now, Danielle, what's your Star Trek history? What's your entry point in the Trek universe?
Well, I started with Deep Space Nine back when it first came out because I am of an age. And I was like, Black Captain, Black Captain, Black Captain, my captain. And so I got very, I was very excited. And then after watching that, I was like, well, you know, I got to go back and watch that Next Generation.
Yeah.
And so I did. And that was where I fell in love with it. And my mom was a huge fan of the original series as well.
Yeah.
And so that would be something that once I started getting, you know, my folks, all of my family members are deep, deep into sci-fi.
Wow.
They won't admit it. They feel better about admitting it now that talking about being a nerd is how I pay my rent. They're like, okay, yeah, I guess we're talking about what nerds we are. But so she was very excited that she could share that with me. And then her and my stepdad, whom I love, tried to get me on Babylon 5, and I was like, too far.
Nah, dog.
too far. Not doing it. Although I do love J. Michael Straczynski. He had a really good Spider-Man run up until that weird stuff with Gwen Stacy.
Oh, man.
Very specific. Yeah. I apologize.
One thing that became immediately clear to me the moment I met you is that you know, like, 10 times or maybe 100 times about as much about pop culture as I do. So you will just rip off a reference and I'll be like, wow, I am sure that is super meaningful.
Yeah, that means something to someone. Yeah. Not sure who.
We call them 2%ers here on the show. That's super interesting that Deep Space Nine was your on-ramp, because like Deep Space Nine was something I had to get used to as a prior TNG fan.
Right, because it is so completely, I mean, talk about being on a vacation. Yeah. Just like, oh, we're just hanging out here in space.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And it's, we're all like good people that get along by default and we don't hate each other.
Yeah, it's weird to watch what is essentially the Love Boat in space.
Yeah, that SNL sketch was not far off,
not
was it?
Not far at all.
Love, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Pacific Princess.
Let's talk about Disco. Like, what did how did you like this first season?
I really enjoyed it. And I think we talked a little bit about this when we were in the Grand Canyon. But one thing I appreciated is that I enjoy that we get to see kind of this gap between what the Federation is and what humanity became.
Right.
And back when we're still really like young as a species and stupid and horrible. And so we get to see our, you know, I appreciate that, you know, they're giving some time and some air to this period of us learning to be good as a species.
Right. Like the, in TNG, we have established ourselves as a benevolent force in the galaxy, but at this point, we're still like...
Yeah, and looking at us now, it's like, how would we have ever... Roddenberry, well, you're so cute.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that we're in the mirror universe.
Yeah, clearly.
Or like the adolescence of humanity just happens to last like hundreds and hundreds of years, unfortunately.
Right.
Like, it's a puberty that just doesn't stop.
It is very interesting to watch humanity's growing pains through the lens of this new series.
Yeah, that's interesting. That you're the first person that I've talked to that is like pretty, giving a pretty full-throated thumbs up to the prequelness of it. Like, I feel like a lot of people have been sad about that.
The other things still exist, my dudes, and they keep trying to give us new Star Trek that's set in a later time, and y'all don't watch it. So, like... Y'all ain't watch Captain J. You know what I mean? Like, you don't watch it. So
I'm
they
a
have
big
to
fan
keep...
of Voyager, personally.
But like, yeah. So watch things, and they'll give us more of maybe the stuff that you want.
Yeah, and it seems like this series has succeeded in getting an audience. It seems like it's a good enough series that if it wasn't on CBS All Access, it would be a Westworld or Game of Thrones level success.
I agree. I said it when they announced it, that like, it's such a dumb move to restrict something, especially something that has a budget like this. This isn't like five assholes sitting around a coffee table or whatever and like running in and out of rooms, as the George Carlin bit goes. Like, this isn't that. This isn't something where you only need like this is, it's a huge undertaking.
Right.
And so to potentially limit your viewer base in such a way for something that is so expensive just seems really
misguided. It seems like it comes from a perspective of not having a ton of confidence right away. Like, you limit your exposure to failure by making it a subscription model thing. If they if they launched the show on CBS and kept it on CBS, like, basic cable success is such a different scale than subscription model success, I think. And they sort of ensured a victory here by going in the direction they did, and I get it. For a risk-averse type of business, the way
CBS
that media is,
especially,
I get it.
Is risk-averse.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
You can tell that by their programming.
It's
how many Tom Selleck shows can we get?
All of them.
He's just a license to print money, you guys.
What is it? Big Bang Theory is on its third decade now?
Right. There's young Sheldon. Now they have old Sheldon as well. Is it? it's Tom Selleck in the role of Sheldon.
Yeah. It's going to be real interesting if that young Sheldon thing works to the point where eventually he's just 30 and it's like, it's fine.
Yeah.
No, it's just the Big Bang Theory. They just start redoing Big Bang Theory episodes. It's a soft reboot.
They start doing like subtle plastic surgery interventions to make the kid age into the actor.
Got to get that Adam's apple
just
first.
So that it's like perfect continuity, like the 38 seasons line up perfectly and you can never tell when one switches over to the other.
That's all you need. You just need that Sheldon.
I guess they could probably do that with Benjamin Button technology. They don't need to actually do surgery on the poor guy.
They can just throw a face over his face. Just do an Instagram filter.
Speaking of hardcore plastic surgery, guys, that's a championship pivot right there back in the show. Think about it. Danielle, how early on in Discovery were you hip to the idea of the Ash is Vogue situation?
You know, I'm pretty TV savvy, and I will say, like, maybe I just wasn't. I don't expect that kind of, like, I guess because this is such a different kind of Star Trek show, like, I wasn't necessarily expecting any kind of, like, big twisty things. So it didn't really hit me at all.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, I was pretty, and it is, like, I've read TV tropes. I know what's going on, man.
Sure.
But I just wasn't really expecting it. And that's another, you know, that's another way in which Star Trek Discovery is so different from a lot of the Treks that we're used to.
In that season one, chapter one, end episode when they took the break and took a couple of months off, like, we got, I'd say, like, maybe the most criticism we've gotten on the show was how we interpreted his discussion of, like, what happened to him in the torture environment. Because Adam and I both, you know, at that point, it would, like, the reveal had not happened that Ash and Voke were one and the same, and there were a lot of people in our audience that felt like we overlooked him talking about having been raped in prison, and we were like, oh, like, we definitely read that as, like, he is not Ash Tyler and he is remembering other shit,
right?
Or I don't even know if that's, like, a great summary of, like, what we were interpreting that as, but we definitely didn't interpret it as a rape scene,
right?
And I think that, like, there were people who, like, were kind of triggered by it, honestly, like, who felt like really bad feelings watching that and having that just kind of, like, having us breeze past it. Like, how did you read that scene in the time? And I know that, like, you watched this months and months ago, so
yeah, no, I did go back.
You can't remember exactly what your reaction was.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily read it as that either, but then I started because I'm also that kind of nerd that's like, what do other nerds think? And going online, I was like, oh, then I had to, like, watch it again. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Ooh, feels real bad.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like that could have been a turning point and made the show, like, really rugged and like, deal with some much harsher shit that I don't know is necessarily the right thing for Trek to be doing.
Trek has always talked about these huge societal issues. I do think that it's interesting because the idea of prison rape is so often one that is treated in the media with humor.
Right. It's just
it is
a
something
joke.
To be laughed at. It is a punchline. So, and very few instances are that, you know, there's, like, Oz and stuff, but there have been very few instances of media and especially television actually handling that in a way that is like, rape is bad, is bad, is bad, is bad, and prison rape is not a funny joke. So I do think that, And Drew, this is just something Trek has always done, is right. kind of dealt with these. Now, granted, sometimes it's like a little more heavy-handed with the way that it deals with race issues, where, you know, it's like, oh, we're black aliens. Well, we're white aliens, but like literally. but I don't know. But I do understand how it could be hard for some people to, because it is kind of a heavy subject, and sometimes you don't necessarily want that to mix with your sci-fi fantasy
right.
and with your utopian world. But again, Discovery is not a utopia.
Right. It really isn't. It's kind of amazing how much it isn't. I mean, like, you can imagine that, like, Earth and Vulcan are pretty chill places to hang. But, like, there's still, like, terrorists on Vulcan.
Right. Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. And it Disco. And Vulcan's pretty chill to hang if you're Vulcan.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It really sucks if you're still, anyone else.
Bay is still going to side-eye you if you don't have the pointy ears.
Yeah, you need them ears, man.
Yeah.
You don't get to go to the good schools. Like, yeah.
It makes me realize, like, I never...
What is, like, the ghetto school on Vulcan? Like, yeah. what school would Michael... You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, does she go to, the school that's considered to be on the wrong side of the tracks? The one that, like, doesn't get as much fundraising in the bake sale and stuff?
Yeah, like, it's still very nice and it's still very logical, but, like, maybe occasionally someone winces.
Yeah. I bet
it's like, dangerous.
I would love to see more of Spock and Michael's mother as a character, because that makes me realize, like, what a strong person she must be right. to live there.
Right.
Like, where's that series?
Also, and this is weird, but sometimes my brain goes weird places. The idea that later, at least movie Spock, is totally hooking up with this black chick.
Yeah.
And that he lived... Like, whoa. What was gross? It just, it gets real close to Flash levels of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Iris is your sister. Okay, it's fine. You're married now. Whatever, Barry.
I never thought about that. I guess they're, like, this is Prime Universe and
yeah, this is Prime
Kelvin
and not...
Universe, but they haven't bifurcated yet in the timeline. So,
nope.
So, that Spock presumably has the same... adoptive sister.
If they do another Star Trek movie, I definitely want to see Spock's black ass sister. Right?
I know. I love that as a retcon. Yeah. You know?
Right?
Like,
oh, by the way, Spock's got a black ass sister.
What is like you talked about, like, Captain Sisko being really like exciting for you. Like, what does it mean to you as a black woman to have a Trek series that is starring a black woman?
It's huge. And I'm not going to lie, it did make me want to give it more of a chance than I would. Because I want it to work, man. Like, I love this universe. And Star Trek has always been fantastic with how it has treated its actors of color. So there's always been something for, you know, any of their actors of color, there's always been something for them to do.
Yeah.
Trek has been from day one, like, that's what Star Trek does.
TNG that struck me a couple of times is, like, Worf and Geordi will just have a scene together, and it's not like the brothers having
right.
a chat.
Whereas
it's like,
a lot of TV shows in the 90s that would have been, and it might even have been, you know, oh, well, we can't put the two black folks in a scene where they're the only ones together because right. someone
People
flipping
are gonna
turn might
off
think
the TV.
This is a black show.
Right, yeah.
Turns out people love black shows, but it's like,
yeah,
people love black shit.
Yeah. And like this, I feel like this series is also fun because they're taking it, you know, they're taking it to a more contemporary level with the kind of inclusion stuff. Like the characters are a more modern idea of what an inclusive kind of ship might look like, even
right.
than TNG was or Deep Space Nine.
And, you know, I gotta believe that this is the future Roddenberry wanted. Like, I have to believe that he always would have been like, heck yeah, man, put more stuff in, put in more of the things.
Yeah.
Create an actual utopia on Earth.
As
Although
long
I do,
as the
I,
females aren't main characters, I think he'd be all right with that.
I did say, like, when I was saying earlier before we started recording that when I was reading recaps to kind of refresh myself, I kept getting tripped up because I kept reading, like, as Little Rel. And so I just kept picturing Little Rel. And it's like, no, I've seen the series. Like, that's not...
So I didn't know this actor's name, but the actor and comedian that plays the TSA agent in Get Out, and I guess he's also a character in Insecure, he goes by the name Little Rel.
Yeah.
Man, he must be tripping. Like, that must be so weird for him.
Yeah, it would be literally like if in the next Star Trek there was a character named Danielle Radford, and it's like, oh, that's weird.
Right, but it was like spelled in an alien way. It's not meant to be the name Danielle. It's like
there's like no vowels.
Yeah, it's like a guy and his name is Danielle Radford.
And Ford has a Y in it for some reason. Yeah,
Fjord. We talked a lot about how in the last half of the show, she is really treated as just a story convenience a lot of the time. Like,
right.
She's locked up. She doesn't know what's going on. Occasionally, somebody will come in and be like, oh, by the way, we're in a different universe right now where the Klingons are on Team Vulcan. Anyways, we found out that somebody's trying to blow up Kronos, and here is the nuclear football. Now you're the leader of Kronos. Go forth.
Right, no, she's like a MacGuffin as a person.
Almost, yeah.
She's like a person named MacGuffin.
Which is weird, because she has a lot of agency in the first half.
Right.
Like, they kind of, I feel like they almost lost steam with what her deal is going to be. I'll be very interested to see if she is a character in season two.
Right. So not even just like a character with like function and that matters, but like a
right.
character.
Like, period. Do we, like, if she's like the chancellor of Kronos or something, like, does that factor into anything that happens in season two, or do we just
I mean, I like to believe that there is a plan.
Would hope so.
But
fingers
I don't,
crossed.
Man, I feel like every time I'm give credit to a TV show for having a plan, they
pivot. This show has defied that a few times, though.
Yeah,
like, a lot of the time, it seemed like, what the hell are they oh, that was cool.
Oh, there was a thing. They had a plan.
They planned an arc, like, 8 episodes in advance.
Hey, look at that. I mean, I guess it's pretty easy when you've got the 15.
Yeah.
You're able to...
Right.
There's, like, less chaff.
Yeah. Rewatching really illuminated that for me, too, especially with regard to Laurel and how she's in the background for a lot of episodes, but she's subtly, you know, in rewatching, you notice what she's doing. She's not in the center of the frame, but she's participating in a way that really rewards that second watch. And it gave me the kind of confidence you're talking about, Danielle, in that, like, they really are thinking of all this stuff throughout. They aren't making it up on the fly.
Oh, I love that show. Okay, I definitely have to. I'm scheduling another rewatch because, like, I'll just call it the Laurel cut, where I'm just like watching what she's doing in scenes. I've done that before, where someone has mentioned something about a character. I'm like, okay, well, now I'm just watching this. I'm going to go back and just watch for this.
We both, I think, on our first watch, like, did not even realize that it was the same Klingon lady that from episode to episode, because we're so, like, unused to this version of the makeup, and it's like, is that maybe not, who knows?
Who knows? I do love Laurel. Talk about a TSA agent name.
Yeah,
I think I got an Aunt Laurel out in out in St. Louis.
Sir, sir, what is this? It's a microphone. I'm a podcaster. What's your podcast about? Star Trek. a question I've honestly had to answer a couple of times. Let's talk about season two. Like, what do we hope to get out of it? Like, are there storylines that you felt like you were interested in seeing brought back?
And I think it's because I'm a fan of professional wrestling.
Uh-huh.
I have learned to let go and let God when it comes to things like this.
Uh-huh.
Because if you get really caught up in what you would like to see, all you are doing is setting yourself up for disappointment.
Huh.
And so I have learned to just let what happens and feel about it how I feel. Because as soon as I start, like, really putting my own expectations on it, then it no matter what they do, your imagination's always going to be better than their final product. Because that's just how it works.
Such a good nerd lesson, good nerd credo. Like, Adam and I got interviewed about Discovery before it had come out. You remember that, Adam? I think it was like a Brooklyn.
I don't know, Ben. We've been interviewed a lot.
of one of your many interviews?
We have not been interviewed a lot, but like, I mean, we were both saying like, it sucks that it's a prequel. It sucks that it's about war. Like, I think we were both pretty down on it, and it kind of defied our expectations in the other direction.
Right.
I love going into something like that, though. Like, keeping expectations low is how it is, like, sort of the key to media happiness, I think.
I am such a fan of keeping expectations low.
Yeah. So support our show, but, you know, don't expect too much out of us.
Just keep the bar nice and low where we can.
Have we impressed you through the hundreds of episodes we've made as a greatest gen property? Did you come into it thinking we were dog shit?
Maybe this is a good time to pivot to Pledge Break, guys.
Ooh, Pledge Break, Pledge Break, Pledge Break.
The honest truth is that this show costs money to make, and that is something that we need more of to cover its costs.
You might think that the network pays us. The network doesn't pay us. You do, the listener. Like, that's how we can afford to do this.
The network is it serves a coordinating function, but they're not shelling out. They didn't buy our show. They helped us put it out, but they don't have skin in the game, and we do. Like, we have a producer that in Rob Schulte that gets paid every time we make an episode. You know, we have costs like bandwidth and microphones, mm-hmm. and I had to give my dog a Kong full of peanut butter so that he would be quiet while we recorded today.
Peanut butter is so much, and this dog loves me so hard.
He's really torn between saying hi to Danielle and licking the peanut butter, but
peanut butter won.
He just edged over into peanut butter.
It's fair. Peanut butter's great. Like that's how all of these shows get made. We all get made with the support of all of our listeners, which is great because that also means that, like, we don't really have to shell for stuff that we don't care about.
Right.
I will do it, but I don't have to do it.
Yeah, like, I mean, we were talking a little bit before we sat down about, like, other work that we have had or do
We've
have.
We've both been laid off by the same place, as it turns out.
Yeah. So, and like... And
media!
Like, yeah, media. Hashtag that content machine. But, but, you know, like, we're all in a position where we could go out and get jobs and do and create media and create content for companies that we don't necessarily believe in and about things that we don't necessarily believe in. But with Tights and Fights and with Greatest Discovery and Greatest Generation and Friendly Fire, we are making things that we're actually passionate about. And
and it shows. I swear y'all can tell the difference.
Yeah. Seriously. like
it shows when people care about what they're talking about and when they care about their audience in the way that the people do in the Max Fun community, because you guys are so good at supporting the things that you're into. And it's you know, I'm real into sincerity.
Yeah.
And there is no one more sincere than the Max Fun audience. I love doing that. Like, you know, I joke about making content, but like, I love making episodes of stuff for y'all.
Fucking A.
Because y'all love it and appreciate it more than most of the 21 companies I work for. You guys really appreciate when we put the work out, and that kind of sincerity and enthusiasm it means everything.
So it is MaximumFun.org/donate to support the show on a monthly level. You pick a level that works for you. Adam, what do people get at the $5 a month level?
Well, at the $5 a month level, you get access to the support feed, which has hundreds of episodes at this point of extra content, bonus episodes that we've made, bonus episodes of Tights and Fights, bonus episodes of every Maximum Fun show is on there.
Ooh, what's your favorite bonus episode you guys made?
You know, it honestly might be the Greatest Discovery bonus episode this year for me, because we went back and watched the Mirror Mirror episode of the original series.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and like Adam and I neither of us is terribly conversant in the original series, so it was very fresh for us, but we had a lot of fun watching it, and we had a lot of fun talking about it. What did Tights and Fights do this year?
Oh man, we had a sing-along episode. We break into song a lot. I mean, we can't help it. You have me, and I'm super goofy, and I love breaking out into song for no good reason. You've got Hal Lublin, who is like king of voices and also a voice actor. And then we have critically acclaimed rapper Mike Eagle. And so when you get the three of us into a room together,
that is a triple threat right
we're
there.
Just gonna start singing. And so one of our bonus episodes last year for The Drive, we did a sing-along episode where we did a bunch of like themes, like wrestling themes that people wanted, and then we did some other ones. I believe that we've always done that where we just bust into song, but I think it started a couple of years ago when the podcast was still new and we did a Royal Rumble episode and Hal was very sad because he didn't get to see the thing that he wanted from the wrestler he wanted. Uh-huh. And I just started slowly singing, not End of the Road. It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday, like under him while he was talking about the sad thing. And then Mike joined in and then we ended with all of us.
So you guys were hitting the harmonies and everything?
Mike was hitting the harmonies. Damn. I was not. But he is a professional music man. Yeah. and I talk about pop culture for a living.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that became one of the things that we do, and our audience really appreciated it. And so that's one of my favorite of the bonuses.
The bonus content. It's worth the price of admission by itself. But if you go up to $10, you get to pick an enamel pin. And the enamel pin for our show is a Vulcan salute, and it says "the greatest" under it.
It's really good. You guys have a great pin.
You guys have a great pin.
It's I'm super stoked,
right?
Yeah, it's the strap. Last year it was a chair.
Nice.
It was a folding chair, and yeah, this year it's a strap. It's dope.
The pins were a crazy, crazy success last year, and people were so excited that they made the network set up a thing where if they reached their goal, the enamel pins went on sale, and so many people bought enamel pins on sale that the network raised $100,000 for the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. And I think the plan is to do something similar this year. If the network hits the 25,000 new and upgrading member goal, those enamel pins will be available for purchase by members, and the proceeds will also go to charity. What's the next level, Adam?
At the $20 level, we're going to unlock some knowledge for you, and that knowledge is how to make meat and cheese dip. one of my family recipes, as well as Ben's famous fried chicken recipe. Both are priceless contributions to this cookbook. Danielle, did you or the Tights and Fights crew contribute a recipe to the book?
I was not. I was going to give them my mom's greens, and I got a smooth veto on that one.
Whoa.
Whoa. Just a smooth veto from my mom.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love that. The greens are too good for that book.
My mom was like, why are you giving out recipes? Who are these people? And I was like, they're my fans and they love me and I want to give them something from home. And my mom was like, you know, if they want to come visit, they can come visit and I'll make them greens.
Or you can make
some for a potluck, but don't be giving my greens recipe away.
That is so hardcore. I love it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, she definitely, smooth veto. Oh, and I tried with the ribs first and she just laughed at me.
I think it's Helen Hong has a ribs recipe in that book.
Oh, Helen Hong is delightful. Yeah. I bet her ribs are so good.
I bet they are too.
It sounds like with the recipes from this book, you can make a mighty feast.
So there's probably a page in there that says Daniel Radford's greens, and then
it's just blank.
Page intentionally.
Next year, maybe I'll try.
I think they're still editing the cookbook again. They should do that.
That'd be really funny.
I said, it's just a picture of my mom shaking her head.
They somehow got an animated GIF into a print form.
Look, Max Fun is on the edge of technology.
They are. They're very much.
We will do anything for our fans. We'll figure it out.
Okay, $35 a month. You get all of the things that we have already mentioned, plus you get a rocket engraved juice carafe. And this juice carafe you can use for all kinds of things. You could put flowers in it. You could put juice in it. You could put sunset vodka drinks in it.
Hell yeah, you can.
You can put all kinds of wine in it. Yeah.
Do that decanting.
Mm-hmm.
Get decanted.
Yeah, you let the wine breathe. You get let it oxygenate for, you know, 20 minutes before you sit down to a nice steak dinner. That wine's going to be delicious. So consider the $35 a month level.
Also, you could drink that wine with something that you make from the recipe book.
Yeah, exactly. So these are all compounding levels of support, and they are all super duper awesome. And I am jealous of everybody that gets this stuff.
Ben, we all know that successful people listen to Maximum Fun shows. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Which means those successful people at the $50 level will get a custom metal Max Fun membership card. Much like you can use the juice carafe for anything, you can use that metal card to cut up just about anything you want.
Right.
A tomato.
Any kind of powder.
Yeah.
That you wanted to like separate into rail.
It cleans easily. It cleans so easily.
You could try out the magnetic strip. See if it pays for a dinner out on the town somewhere. Just try it.
If you've got the kind of budget where $50 is not going to go, you know, is not going to be missed every month, and you can support at that level, we really deeply appreciate it. And of course, there's $100 and $200 a month levels up from there. So all of that stuff is hugely appreciated, and we really honestly cannot do the shows that we do without your support. So go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Then, you know, post about it on social media. Use the hashtag MaxFunDrive. Let us know that you pledged to support the show, and we will do our best to thank you in person, because we really do appreciate it deeply. It has changed our lives for the better.
Oh, man, there's nothing I love more than when I go to a show and there's, like, fans there.
Yeah, I see those pins, and I'm like, I'm doling out the high fives left and right.
Oh, yeah, I'm a hug machine, baby.
Hell yeah.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
For someone worthy of our attention.
Who are you?
We've encountered them.
Those are Klingons?
Danielle, it doesn't sound like you're as surprised as we are when we see fans at shows.
It's wrestling. The community is quite small, and there's basically just the one of me. I am very recognizable. I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there that if you're at a wrestling show and you you see a chubby black lady with a long wig on, odds are it's me.
That's probably you.
The odds on favorite is that you've probably just seen a Danielle Radford. If you're in California, even more likely.
Right on.
Danielle, independent wrestling has really taken off. Do you go to indie shows?
I do. In fact, I need to get tickets for Shimmer, I think, is going to be doing something here coming up, which I'm really excited for. Shimmer is an all-ladies promotion, and they have some of my absolute favorites right now, including Fun. Mercedes Martinez, who is one of my wives but doesn't know it. One time I was at Rise.
Well, she's a big fan of this, so she now
see. One time I was at Rise, which was out here, and she was doing a hardcore match, which was amazing, and she fell right by me and her hair smelled like hope. just hopes and dreams.
Daniel, yeah. Next time I'm in LA, I want to see wrestling with you.
Dude, please, can we?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, there's PWG, but there's also a lot of really good indie shows around here. Ooh, let's go to Lucha Vavoom. Okay, this podcast is now just me setting up dates to go see wrestling. I'm sorry, we were talking about Star Trek Discovery.
I have never been to a wrestling match, but if you guys would have me, I would love to.
Oh yeah, let's do it,
please,
Ben.
Please do.
Adam, we got a priority one message on Greatest Generation from a Portland-based wrestling group, did we not?
There is an indie circuit up here, primarily in Portland. It's super popular down there. But yeah, there's a circuit here. I don't think it's probably not as substantial as what you have in Southern California, but
look, I will also big up Seattle wrestling all day, every day. I'm from Seattle and I love most of those boys. Those sweet, sweet 3-2-1 boys are amazing. I don't know a lot of the Defy dudes, but I know some of them and they're also pretty special. So,
yeah, Defy is fairly big, in Seattle. Big enough to have commercials on TV and stuff.
That's crazy. My friend Professor Jake Stratton, aka the dude who poured coffee on Alex Jones, was part of an initiative to get, because wrestling still fell under like the sports commission thingy up in Seattle, where they would have a lot of rules, like you would have if it was like a professional boxing match, right, or MMA, right, that like younger promotions just couldn't do. He was part of a team of people who was like, this is like fight theater. We're more like stuntmen, not so much MMA. Yeah. And so it got them to relax a lot of those rules. And some of them are still good rules and they should still have them. But basically, they were so restrictive that WWE was the only company that could afford to put on shows in Washington. And so Jake was part of what helped now. So you could have stuff like Defy and you can have more touring, you know, more wrestlers are able to tour the Pacific Northwest. It's a beautiful thing.
The question that comes to mind for me is, who would win in a Royal Rumble between the members of the Discovery crew?
Oh, man. I kind of think that Saru, he's got those kicks.
Yeah, that's tough to beat.
Michael can do the Vulcan Death Pinch. That's got to be something.
Yeah, one thing that I love about that series is every time she gets in fisticuffs with somebody, she's constantly reaching for that neck, and they're like grabbing her wrist and like keeping the hand away from the neck.
Why didn't people do that to Zena? Remember, Zena had that thing where she's like, I have cut off the flow of oxygen to your brain. You will die in 30 seconds. Like, just like wear a turtleneck or like just wear a neck brace, my guys.
That's what they do in Mirror Universe. They got the metal turtle.
See?
Oh, is that what that's about? It's all Vulcan.
That is my hypothesis.
Look, if I was in a place where I constantly had to fight Vulcans or Vulcan adjacent people, I would definitely always be wearing a metal choker.
Yeah, I just don't want us to move past the fact that I said the phrase Vulcan prophylaxis without acknowledging it.
No, that was brilliant. It was quite beautiful.
Danielle, one of the things we do toward the end of every show is select a drunk Shimoda, which you may or may not recall from the second episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. A one-off character who got super drunk and endangered the entire ship, but also had the most fun doing it. It's sort of like a spiritual character that we identify with most. With that in mind, was there a drunk Shimoda that you had for the Star Trek Discovery first season? Someone that you identified with most, or maybe that you thought was having the most fun, or like someone who you saw and was like, oh yeah, that's me.
I feel like I'm going to answer my first thing, which is just Michael.
Yeah, reflex.
But like, I don't, it's such an obvious one. But yeah, no, I gotta say, Michael, I identified with feeling out of place. Mm-hmm. I identified very heavily in whatever that actress has to do to keep that wig on. Highly, highly identify with the wig work. And the fact that Michael is so flawed and always making like, because she is, she's incredibly flawed, but like, I like that we've gotten to a point now where you could have the lead be a black lady and also not have to be perfect. Sisko, but Sisko is a perfect person. He makes very few mistakes.
Right.
He's the best dad. He's the best everything. And so it's nice to be able to have more dimension.
She's the first character I feel like I can remember in a long time who's like the main character of a show who's going on a very identifiable personal journey.
Yeah.
Like, I have made a series of judgment calls that didn't have great results.
Right.
Even if they were like the right thing to do in the moment, they didn't have great results. And I'm like trying to figure out how I can fit into the world, like, despite like the instincts that I have in a way that actually like affects things positively.
Right. Also, isn't it? I find it to be incredibly interesting. And this was a lot of the thing that also happened with The Last Jedi that some people didn't appreciate, but I definitely did. But this idea that like in fiction, it's always the, you know, the person who pops off, the charming rogue, the one who goes their own way and does things their own way and does things spur in the moment and it always works out.
Right.
And then now you have this character where it's like, oh no, actions have consequences. Because I feel like while she is flawed, part of the framing of that is because her actions actually do have consequences, where I feel like you could throw Captain Kirk in and have him make any of those same mistakes and he would be fine.
Right.
It's just the way the writing is. It never catches up with him.
Yeah.
And so this is the first series where it's really like, yeah, no, that cowboy shit, even if you're doing it on accident, it does not work out for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me.
As flawed as she is as a character, another way that she is so different in the history of Star Trek is the way people hate her. You know, like there are many examples in Star Trek of characters not getting along with other characters, and then those characters are gone. And it's mostly like a personality trait thing.
Right. Yeah.
But in that third episode, when Michael interacts with other people and you just see the way that she's seen, you see how she's hated. And you see it throughout the entire first season about how people don't trust her. That is such a foreign idea to have in a Star Trek show.
Yeah, she's the McNulty of Star Trek.
Yeah.
it's right?
Yeah. So that makes Lorca Lieutenant Daniels and Tilly is
new show.
Prince Belusky.
Tilly's Bunk.
Oh, Tilly's the Bunk.
She's got to be Bunk.
A man has got to have a code. This is so fucking cool.
But yeah, no, like, in that same way that, like, people don't trust McNulty because everything he does, even if he's right, it makes their lives and their jobs harder. Yeah.
It took him 5 seasons to, like, grow up a little bit, though, and Michael Burnham is, like, his, like, way further along.
Oh, she's on the advanced track for sure. It's space, man. You ain't got time to fuck around. And there's a war.
God, the McNulty as Michael Burnham thing is just galaxy braining me right now. I need to hold on to my desk. That is fire.
That is hot fire. Well, Daniel Radford, it has been such a treat to have you here on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's been so much fun.
How do people get Tights and Fights, the podcast?
We come out every Thursday wherever you download your podcasts.
How convenient, because this show comes out on Tuesday and our other two shows come out on Monday and Friday. So there's a nice slot in there for people to download Tights and Fights.
Just go in there and get you a little Tightsy Fightsies. And in fact,
would you say that it's like a really fun show to listen to whether or not you care about wrestling?
That's what I've been told by listeners. There's a lot of listeners who are like, yeah, I don't care about wrestling at all. I just like hanging out. I like hanging out with you guys and you guys make me laugh.
Yeah.
And that's really nice. I encourage you to listen to the show, whether you watch wrestling or not. I was previously like, why would anyone listen to this if they don't like? But for me, it's also sometimes I'm having so much fun in there that I forget that we're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
I think I'm just hanging out with my buds, which is great until a fan's like, hey, Danielle, I love your enthusiasm. But like, sometimes I think you forget that you're recording. And I'm like, no, I do. I 100% forget that I'm recording because I'm having a really good time.
Well, we've had a really good time with you here today. Do you have like a Twitter and Instagram that people can follow? Too?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You can just find me at Danielle Radford on Twitter. You can also find me on Thursdays as I am the kind of audience surrogate for movie fights on Screen Junkies. I also usually do the morning show for Screen Junkies on Thursdays. You can find me in a lot of different places. Please follow my Instagram, Danielle_Radford. I'm trying to get to that magical 10,000 that unlocks these sponsorships, trying to get some free fat lady clothes. So if you would like to follow me there,
that is a noble goal.
You would be doing me, you'd be doing me a lot of good. And I promise, like, my feed is usually just like selfies or me doing something very stupid.
We recently went to the Grand Canyon and a deer ate Danielle's dress.
At deer ate my. I still can't wear. I can't wear that dress. I tried to take it home and fix it. There
you know
was
what's
no.
Really weird. I was making a Twitter thread about friendly fire the other day, and I was looking for Rambo gifs, and I was like using the Twitter gif search engine, and if you type in Rambo, you show up in there, and it's you wearing that dress that deer ate. And it's like, what? Like, it doesn't have anything to do with Rambo.
Rest in peace, dress. You lived a good life.
Yeah, it's immortalized in GIF form.
I look real banging in that dress, and so I wound up wearing it a lot. That thing's got to get a Viking burial, I think.
Yeah, RSVP the dress. Well, thank you so much for coming in. So this is our last episode of Greatest Discovery for the Max Fun Drive. Is that right, Adam?
I believe that's the case, unless we come up with another super fun idea.
Yeah, well, so I think there may be more bonus content forthcoming.
Right.
But we've been having conversations with the network. I think it sort of depends on how our show does in the Max Fun Drive, but we might want to consider a more definite release schedule for the show, and that might mean more episodes than we were initially thinking. So, you know, we're in the off season right now. It's not going to be weekly, but your support is really going to make a big impact on our decision making about how we treat the off season with this show in particular.
It's a real hostage situation.
So MaximumFun.org/donate. And how do we end this usually? I'm totally blanking. Oh, we just throw to Rob and he ends it. That's why.
That's right.
So we'll let Rob take it from here, and he will give you one last impassioned plea, because this is how he gets paid too.
Hey everyone, Rob Schulte here, the producer of The Greatest Discovery. I just wanted to break the fourth wall once more to say thanks to everyone who has donated during the Max Fun Drive. It's really going to keep the lights on here at The Greatest Discovery, which I'm happy about. Also, if you haven't yet donated, now's the perfect time. Max Fun Drive is still going on. You can get all of those awesome rewards. You just need to go to MaximumFun.com/donate. Make sure to tick off The Greatest Discovery, and we'll keep making good pods.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.